Welcome to Running on Ice, the coolest community in freight. I'm your host, Mary O'Connell, bringing you the latest tech updates, warehouse news, and everything happening in the cold chain world. Not only is there the coolest show in freight, but there's also Running on Ice, a newsletter that could not be colder. You can subscribe to that on freightwaves.com/runningonice. Today, we welcome Dave Hicks, the Vice President at TBM Consulting Group. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
I am pretty excited about today because this is something that we've never once talked about on this show. But I know for an absolute fact, every facet of what we've talked about on the show has to abide by this. And that is kind of that sanitation throughout warehouses and throughout the cold chain. And why it may seem annoying sometimes. I, for one, as a consumer, am very glad that it happens because I don't really want lettuce that has sat next to raw chicken or, my strawberries to come from a warehouse that's covered in insert horrible things here. Before we get too far into that, let's get some background on you and kind of how you got started at TBM Consulting Group.
Sure. Yeah. I joined TBM in January of 2005. So I'm in my 20th year of what was intended to be a 1 to 2 year bridge job. So I'd been with my previous employer for 17 or 18 years and decided it was time to make a change and stumbled upon TBM and I said, well, I can do this for a year or two until I find a job. And 20 years later, here I am. So it's been a great ride. I love doing it. I love, you know, we get to meet so many cool people and play around in so many different manufacturing processes I live. If you've ever seen that show, How It's Made or How It's, that's the life I live. So it's cool.
I think that has to be, honestly, that's the most on-brand thing for, I think, everyone we've interviewed over the course of this show is just, oh, yeah, I meant to get into this job or I meant to get into logistics. I meant to get into supply chain for just a year or two until I found something else. And then just like everyone else, we just stick around because it's so fun.
Yeah. Yep.
As I was mentioning before, one of the things that not everyone thinks about in throughout cold chain is sanitation. And I mean, it's something that we do have to think about on the dry van side of things, but not nearly as much because honestly, if a pair of jeans gets dusty or, you know, if the box gets put in some mud, like, which I don't know how much mud is in the warehouse, but you get what I'm saying, where if it happens to a pair of jeans, ultimately that product is not damaged. You just, you know, wash the jeans and you're good to go. So, but unfortunately, that's not the case on the cold chain side of things, especially with the pharmaceutical world, the food world, but mostly I'm just imagining medical warehouses and how much of a sterilization process that they have. So what are some of those more common practices throughout the sanitation world that helps prevent this cross-contamination of products within the warehouse?
Yeah, so I think you want to think organization, right? It's really critical, and not just being well-organized, but organization on the scale of like an operating room, you know, that level. So in the world of lean that we play around in, we talk about a concept called 5 S's. And those 5 S's are sort, get rid of things you don't need, set, organize the things you do need, shine, clean on a regular basis, standardize and sustain, right? So if you think those first 3 S's, and how they impact what goes on from a sanitation standpoint and contamination. So when you sort, you get rid of the things that you don't need, which are usually in the way of the things you do need anyway, right? So you get rid of them, but not only that, but those are also things that can bring contaminants into the environment. So we like to sort out those things, the things that we keep. You know, we set, we organize it. We might use shadow boards. We might, you know, have special homes for tools or things like that. But we get things organized so that we can start to tell by looking around that things are where they're supposed to be. And then obviously with the shine, which is cleaning, we have a very specific intent in what we're talking about, right? We want to clean to prevent contamination. So it's not just clean to be tidy, it's clean to really achieve one of our main goals, which is prevent that contamination. So think of those three S's. Think of visual control, being able to tell at a glance that things are the way they're supposed to be, right? And that can take a lot of different forms. You know, it could be just organization. It could be signage. It could be color coding. Anything that helps us by looking so that we know, hey, this is the way it's supposed to look, and things are doing that. And the last thing I would say is really to simplify things, right? So the example I like to use, I've seen this a couple times when you go into an environment and you're supposed to wash your hands before you go in. If you want to make sure that people do that, you need to make it very simple for them, right? So you don't want to say, okay, we're going to go in that door over there, but first you need to go over that door and wash your hands, right? You want that sink to be right, you know, I'm going to go through that door, and on the other side of that door, there's a sink. You wash your hands, okay? That'll get it done. So those easy things get done.
I like that, removing all those barriers or those additional potential obstacles, because again, if someone that washes their hands has to, you know, if they have to wash their hands before they go in, but they have to use the same door handle that someone that might not have freshly washed hands, then that negates the whole point of washing your hands in the first place.
Yep. Good observation.
I guess when it comes to when you find some of those things that have been cross-contaminated, or maybe it's time to reevaluate a process because, you know, the apples bled on the chicken or vice versa or something along those lines. You find a cross-contamination and one time, okay, whatever, it was a fluke, something happened, not ideal. But if it happens again, at what point in time do you kind of need to step back and go, okay, well, our current process isn't working for us anymore because we've had, oh, you know, one or two cross-contamination events or however many events that equal would be on the threshold that a warehouse is okay with. Like when, if it ever has to happen, do you have to go back through the beginning of those phases and maybe reorganize something or readopt some new policies to prevent this cross-contamination from happening in the future?
Yeah, I think it's an ongoing battle, right? So you're constantly evaluating and auditing to make sure that certain things get done. You know, everybody understands product audits, right? They understand when I'm checking product, but you also have to audit your processes. And there's a really cool concept. Some people do this really well and others haven't been introduced to it yet, but it's called layered auditing. And the way layered audits work, let's say I'm a supervisor in an area and you're my department manager. So maybe one of the things I do every day is I'm going to audit standard work of a person. And I do that every day. And I watch them and I read the standard work. And if they do a good job, I thank them for doing that. If they don't follow standard work, I get to coach them on that and I help them improve. Then maybe in your standard work as my department manager, instead of doing it every day, once a week, you do that. So you come out and you do that audit. And for me, what makes it really effective, what I want you to do, if that person doesn't follow standard work, provided it's not a safety violation, right? If it's a safety violation, step in immediately and correct it. But if it's not a safety violation, I don't want you to coach that person. I want you to come and coach me. I want you to say, hey, Dave, I was in your area doing my layered audit and I noticed this and I just thought I'd let you know. And that gives me a chance to go and coach my person. And now we've taken that learning opportunity and spread it across multiple layers of the organization. So very effective tool. You're going to always be observing, revising, auditing, all those things, but you want that to be as effective as you can.
I really like that approach, you know, kind of, I mean, normally I'm all for advocating to, you know, correct the problem immediately when you see it with the person that's making the problem. Obviously, if it's not safety related do whatever you need to do to physically stop that person from doing what they're doing.
Yep, that's right.
But if it's just kind of a handling thing, I kind of like that, you know, bring it back to someone that can maybe remind a team of 10 people. So that way it's not just one person that they're correcting. If it's a common, if it's just a misunderstanding in training, then if we get all 10 people involved, then suddenly it's not a problem warehouse-wide anymore. So I really like that approach. It kind of, for lack of a better analogy, it kind of two birds, one stone's a problem.
And it's good. It's very effective. You know, think about the shingles on your roof. They're overlapped for a reason. And we're talking about doing the same thing with that auditing. We overlap it to make it effective for the organization.
I guess when you guys, so when you guys go in to kind of square one, come up with a solution that's going to work for people, or maybe you have a warehouse that's already like maybe 60% of the way there, you guys just need to come in, fine tune some things, do some more effective training. What strategies have you guys found to be the most effective in kind of streamlining processing, improving existing sanitation practices, to really make sure that there is that consistent safety and sanitation throughout the supply chain?
Yeah, I think, well, I mentioned visual control previously. And again, I would tell you the same thing here. You know, very often, employees in our environment are going to wear different colored smocks, for example. So if you're in processing area, maybe you wear a white smock. If you're in maintenance, you wear a blue smock. Or, you know, if you're in a warehouse, you wear something else. Quality wears another. And so that way, again, you get that visual control. You can see if people are where they're supposed to be. If someone is not where they're supposed to be, it stands out. You use that power of the layered audit to make sure that you're effective and you continue to be. And then not just the layered audit, but then also I would add standard work to the whole process. Make sure that people understand the standard work that they have and that they're able to follow it. And I'll give you an example. When I was talking about the five S's earlier, the fourth S is standardized. And so my example with that is many years ago, I worked in a plant and we had at the end of every shift, a 10-minute cleanup period. Okay. And so of course I knew all the folks in the plant and I would go out on the shop floor at the 10-minute cleanup period. Where do you think everybody was at? They were lined up at the time clock as far as the eye could see, right? So, and of course, I'd walk down the line and I'd see people that I know and I'd joke with them. And I'd say, hey, I thought you were supposed to be cleaning up. And every time they tell me the same thing. They look at their hands. I'm clean, Dave. I go, oh, okay. It dawned on me. We had this 10-minute period that we call the cleanup period, but we never told anybody what to do. So we had not standardized. So if I said to you, you got 10 minutes to clean up. If I say to my wife, you got 10 minutes to clean up. If you say to me, I got 10 minutes to clean up, three different things, right? And so finally, we figured out we had to create the standard work that said, okay, 2 minutes, I need you to replenish product. 3 minutes, wipe down the table. You know, 2 minutes, sweep the floor. 2-3 minutes, go wash up. And then once you do that, things happen. It, you know, like we said earlier, if you keep it simple, simple gets done. And so creating that standard work and making sure people understood it and also giving them the guideline of about how long it should take to do something, you know, that really helps them get it done.
That is something that I never in a million years would have thought to even put together. Like, just go clean up. Like, you know, just go clean up. Not necessarily, here's a list of things that you need to make sure are clean before you leave for the day. But that makes so much sense because, again, like kind of like when maybe if you work in a restaurant and you come in after somebody and like they're supposed to clean the area or replenish things, you're always going to have those people that do it very well and you're happy to come in after. And then you're always going to have those people where you spend the first half of your shift kind of doing what they should have done at theirs. But I think that also, I feel like that also, not only for sanitation purposes, but also kind of for that morale purposes of knowing I'm coming into basically a clean slate when I walk in every single time, regardless of who might have been at the station before me. And I like that like secondary benefit. Although I never in a million years would have thought to just standardize it, but I guess it works.
It works and it's very effective.
That's really cool. I like that approach. So I guess when it comes to, because most of the time, if you're working in a cold chain warehouse, they're just the sheer nature of those products, you will have spoilage. And so when you have that spoilage, whether it's through maybe, you know, it got missed on an inventory or it just went bad faster than it was expected or a refrigerator unit failed, heaven forbid. How do you guys really kind of address and sort through some of those spoilage situations and go, okay, well, this spoiled because of just the sheer nature of doing business of just it's the generic amount of loss that we have versus, okay, this spoiled because of practices that we have and because of things that we could have intervened to prevent that from spoilage. Because, I mean, let's be honest, it's cold chain. It's doing business. There's always going to be a baseline level of loss in any type of product.
Yeah, so let me share a very, very complex process here. I call it MBWA, management by walking around. Okay? So that's the first step is, you know, we have to get leaders out into the area to be able to observe and see the things that are going on, right? That leads to so many other things, right? Because when you get a leader out in the area and they're walking around, people will come up to them. People will talk to them. They'll point things out. You know, they'll see things for themselves. All of that is sort of the prerequisite for doing everything. And so many times I work with clients where you look at their Outlook calendar, for example, and it's like meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting. Okay, yeah, and I ask them, where's the time when you're going out on the shop floor, right? I mean, how can you do your job without doing that? So MBWA, management by walking around. So one of the things that's really important is you have to create a culture of good problem solving. And to do that, you need to understand a couple of things. So on this slide that you're looking at, you can see part of it talks about methodology and the other part talks about tools. So problem solving methodologies, just like problems, that they occur across the continuum where you know, they're not all the same. Not all problems are created equal. And I'll give you an example. It's not food, but it's a very simple example that I think everybody will understand. So suppose I'm running a drill press, right? Think to yourself, what happens sometimes when you run a drill press? Well, guess what? Drill bits get broken, right? So when that drill bit breaks, what do we want to do? Do we want to shut down everything and I'll bring over five of my best friends and we'll have a big research into what happened. No, we just want to change the drill bit and get back to drilling holes, right? So that's what you would call abnormality management. When you look at that continuum, on the one end, we have abnormality management. Something happened that's not normal. Normally, I drill holes. Abnormality, oops, bit broke. Change the bit, go back to drilling holes. Now, what if in the same situation, I happen to notice, you know what? Every time we run this one job, my drill bits break more than when I don't. Different type of problem, right? So that might require a different approach to solve. So it's not as simple as change the bit. Now, maybe we do have to collect some data. Well, let me see how many bits broke when I'm running normal things, how many bits break when I run that job, and I can compare those and say, okay, is there really a difference? If there is, now what is it about that job that makes it happen like that? Well, maybe that's that really hard material we use for the aerospace product, right? And so there's a difference. So that's the idea of understanding problem-solving methodology and having that good, mature problem-solving culture that we know not all problems are the same. They're not created equal. Some take one type of method to solve. Some take another type of method to solve. And normally, again, if you look on that slide, it has tools, I think, across the top of it. Normally, those different methods of problem solving will have tools that are associated with them. So on the far end, where we have Six Sigma Black Belt, DMAIC, Define, Measure, Analyze, Improve, Control, you can get some pretty sophisticated tools, you know, experimental design and things like that. So maybe in the middle, we'll still have some other tools that we might use, capability analysis and that sort of thing. But down at the far end, you know, a tally sheet, for example, great tool, very simple tool, and we can use it for a lot of different things. A Pareto chart is probably one of the most powerful problem-solving tools, and not complex and not difficult to do. But that's the idea, is we got to create that culture in the business that says, okay, one, I'm out, I'm observing what's going on, I understand the things that are happening, and then two, we have a culture of problem-solving that recognizes that problems are different and need different approaches to resolve.
And really, I like that because, like you said, it's one thing if an accident happens or something breaks. Like, that's just the cost of doing business, of manufacturing, of running a warehouse. Something's going to break. You're going to need to fix it. It's just the nature of the beast. But being able to take that step back and go, hold on a second. This is like, you know, the fourth time we've tried to fulfill this order, and every time something breaks. Okay, well, clearly something that we're doing here is not right. Whether it's we need to get a different, in the example of the drill bit, we need to get a different drill bit, or maybe we need to talk to our customer, our supplier, about different types of material that we can use to make this. Because ultimately, also, that's time lost if you have to sit there and replace everything. Because I've learned a little bit in manufacturing that when you have to replace something, it's not usually as easy as on like your power drill, where you click it the other way, change your drill bit, and put a new one on, and then a minute later you're back up and running. I mean, that's not always the case in major manufacturing.
It's usually not, that's for sure.
And I know that any downtime is bad time, because sometimes you just have people standing there waiting to work, which is not great.
No, never good. One of our seven wastes, waiting, right?
All right. So that being said, we are running out of time a little bit today, and there is a question that everyone that comes on the show has to answer. And Dave, you are no exception. Are you ready for what could be the hardest question you've been asked all day today?
Okay. I think I'm ready.
Is cereal considered a soup?
Is cereal considered a soup? I would say while it's in the box, it's a dry good.
Okay.
As soon as you put your milk on it, it's breakfast soup.
Okay. I like that. Breakfast soup. I am firmly team it's not a soup, but I also don't usually eat my cereal with milk. So I'm a monster who just takes the dry goods from a box into a bowl and just eats it.
And yeah, that's what my grandkids do.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us today. If someone wants to reach out to you outside the show to pick your brain on different ways to get started with sanitation or organization or streamlining processes, where can they find you outside the show?
You know, the easiest website, tbmcg.com, TBM Consulting Group. So tbmcg.com.
Awesome. Thank you again so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you.